League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show Summer Special. Europa League. After last night's Bono excitement, today team featuring Matvienko goes sneaking out the back door of Europa League as Inter triumph 5-0 over Shakhtar and reach Friday's final with Sevilla in a Conte no contest. We ask, could Messi even get into this Inter side? Next up, it's the Champions League semi-finals. Two nights of Franco-Prussian drama, beginning with PSG against a team that makes them look like bastions of tradition, RB Leipzig. It's the Totally Football Show Summer Special in association with Paddy Power. Tuesday, 18th of August, everybody. And here in the pod today, it's welcome Sasha Gurionov.
Evening, James.
Good evening to you. And also with us, James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
Hello to you too. Alvaro is going to be along, Alvaro Romeo, a little bit later on to talk about, you know, the latest from Barcelona. We're going to begin with what was the biggest semi-final win ever in the UEFA Cup or Europa League, Inter's 5-0 demolition of Shakhtar Donetsk.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Hanno dato zero alla causa. Attenzione, Lukaku fa tutto da solo! Grandissimo gol di Lukaku! Grandissimo gol di Lukaku! Si merita tutti gli applausi. È il 5-0 dell'Inter sullo Shakhtar.
Grandissimo Lukaku indeed, and the whole Nerazzurri crew. Biggest win in a European semi-final, in any European semi-final since AC Milan did Real Madrid 5-0 back in 88-89. Woof. All right, James Horncastle, how do you feel about those Nerazzurri? Not so patso now, eh?
No, in fact, one of the best players on the pitch tonight, Nicolò Barella, he was asked what difference Conte had made to his game. He was like, I'm less instinctive now. I think more with my head. I think more about the game. And that more rational kind of Inter came out, I think, tonight, because one of the things that was really impressive about them, it wasn't just the scoreline, it was how they managed the game. Because at the end of the first half, for example, you saw Shakhtar begin to get a little bit of a rhythm together, impose themselves on Inter. And Inter just said, right, if that's what you're going to do, we're going to sit back, we're going to dig in, and you're not going to be able to lay a single punch on us. And then, of course, in the second half, they just put the accelerator down and ran away with it. And they were really impressive. I thought, again, just how they went about deciding when to sit off Shakhtar and when to go and press them. They just got the balance right. And the goals that they scored from winning the ball high up the pitch, in some respects, thanks to their wonderful playmaker, the Shakhtar goalkeeper, Piatov, who... I think was auditioning for the Inter number 10 shirt tonight with some of the balls that he was giving to their strikers and midfielders. It was just a dominant performance and picked up really on where they left off against Leverkusen.
Mm. Donetsk, a massively disappointing night, I'm sure you'll feel, Sasha, from them. But they actually didn't start that badly. It took a huge error from Piatov to actually open up the scoring.
Yeah, when I was on last time, I said that the vulnerable positions in the Shakhtar team are the centre-backs and the goalkeeper. I think he said he was actually error-prone. And yet again, he proved to be so in this game. I mean, when it's a very tight game, as it was for the first hour, one mistake was punished. And to be honest, you know, James was saying how, you know, Borelli, you know, thinks about what he does now. I think he had a lot of time to think as Piatov played that pass to him and to go wide. And again, difference in class. So you could see Lautaro bury that header. When Shakhtar had the chance at 1-0 on the hour, the header went straight at Handanovic. And 2 minutes later, Inter got the second. So I think Inter's goals were timed very well. I think Inter... like the way Inter played, every time they fell into a proper 5-3-2 when they were in defence, I think they were clearly waiting to hit Shakhtar on the counter. Shakhtar, I thought, did very well not to overcommit, maybe a little bit too well. There was a moment, I think, just before the first goal when Marlos had a chance to go forward, he actually checked and stopped. And I think you could see that that set the pattern for the game. And I think after that, it was going to be decided on mistakes. And sadly, I think in this situation, once Pjatov messes up for the first one, I also think his footwork was poor for the second goal. And then they just fell apart because I think Inter went up a gear and completely steamrolled them, which was quite disappointing because I thought they tried to play a very disciplined game, just undone by the error-prone goalkeeper.
They only committed 3 fouls all evening, Shakhtar. Inter had 21. Were you surprised at how little fight there was in them?
I don't think it's a fight. I think I was listening to the BT commentary, and after about a quarter of the game, Robbie Savage said was saying, "Oh, you got to take risks." I don't think Shakhtar is that type of team. And I think even before the game, Luis Castro, the manager, was saying yesterday that, you know, calmness is in their DNA. So I think, you know, even at 1-0, they were very much in the game and they were waiting for the moment and they got their moment. And I don't think they had to overcommit. It's just that they didn't take the chance and were hit by the sucker punch. And after that, that was it.
Well, the goals flew in after that Moraes miss, as you say, barely a minute after D'Ambrosio heads one in, then Lautaro Martinez gets his second. The first was that off that Pjatov mistake when Barella put in an absolutely wonderful curling ball and he headed it home. Lukaku then made it 10 straight Europa League games that he gets on the score sheet, and then he adds another one after that. He's now on 33 goals for the season.
Yeah.
And those comparisons with Ronaldo are coming thick and fast.
Well, he's a goal away from matching Ronaldo, who had the most prolific first season of any Inter player in their illustrious history, which is quite an accolade, even though no one really on social media or certainly in United Twitter wants to give him that. So they'll point out that it's a different age when Ronaldo did it. He did it in fewer games and all that's true. But at the same time, it remains a very impressive feat.
Different Serie A as well.
It is. Okay, James. Let's keep diminishing this achievement. I still think it deserves to be looked on and celebrated because there aren't many players who've been able to do that, particularly in their first season. Let's not forget Lukaku had no preseason whatsoever because he was sort of hanging around for United and Inter to get this deal going. It looked at one stage like he was going to go to Juventus because Inter couldn't get the deal done. And he wasn't really training with United all that much either. I remember what in his second game, he had a back spasm, which didn't keep him out too much. But so my point being is that there are certainly a lot of factors that meant that this didn't have to happen, that Lukaku might have just had a 15 or 20 goal season instead of a 33 goal one. And, you know, I think as we said, certainly on BT's morning show today, James, that, you know, Romelu's become a leader for this team. And, you know, Conte has been trying to get the entire team to raise its level rather than just the star players like Romelu and Lautaro. He wants everyone to really step up. And I think that was the really encouraging thing tonight because you saw two of their younger players, Italian players. You know, this is Internazionale who, you know, were the first Italian club to field, you know, sort of a starting 11 of all foreign players. To have two young Italians like those two stepping up and doing the business for them tonight. I think Barella, over the course of this Europa League campaign in Germany, has been excellent for them. Is another thing to be kind of quite excited about, really.
I think it's also quite a nice touch that Lukaku could be matching Ronaldo's achievement in that his first season. Because remember, Inter won the UEFA Cup that year. And also, Ronaldo had a huge semi-final against Spartak Moscow when he scored at least one phenomenal goal away in Moscow on a pitch that had no grass.
That's incredible.
I think it was just after the winter. I think it was in April. And there was no grass. He was playing basically on a mud pitch. And you know, the Russians were very disappointed, but they were like, wow, this guy, this is incredible. How can you play football on this type of pitch? So they won the cup. I think Lukaku is currently outscoring Ronaldo in Europe. I think he's got 14 goals and 8 assists in his last 10 Europa League games. So I think it would be really nice if he lifts that trophy at the end of this season, perhaps with more goals than Ronaldo.
Interesting. Sevilla, of course, the opponents that await Inter on Friday, who have the bags of tradition. Looking back, James, can you remember when was the last time Inter looked this convincing in Europe? We We were impressed with their performance against Bayer Leverkusen, but there were the same questions about killing off a game. This time, there were none of those doubts, none of those inefficiencies.
No, I think this was up there with what we saw in the group stages in the Champions League, but they weren't able to kind of sustain over 90 minutes the away games against Borussia Dortmund and Barcelona, where they took the lead and were very good for the first hour and then faded. And that was because Conte thought that they didn't have the depth, he didn't have the players to go to on the bench. But I think in wider into history, you know, going back over the course of the last decade, you are looking at... really since the treble. That was the last time that we saw Inter give their supporters nights like these.
But not scorelines like these.
No, not scorelines like these, but I think emotions like this. I think this has been true of the entire campaign, really, particularly the first 3 or 4 months. This feeling that Inter are Inter again, and not the Pazzi Inter, that they are a competitive team that can win things. That sense has been elusive, really, for the last 9 years. And I think Conte's given it back. And again, just listening to the players, particularly tonight, but, you know, at various different stages of the season, they believe that. The fan base believes that. And I think, that is something that has been missing, because there's always been this sense with Inter, and sometimes it's reappeared this year, like against Bologna, against Sassuolo, that they are flaky. But for the most part, I would say this year they've been very convincing, and I again just wonder how that with this let's go away to Germany, let's play every 3 days. It does feel like that kind of major tournament mentality, mini camp that I think Conte actually really likes. And I think that's the other thing to look at from tonight. Conte has that question mark over him always about, he just doesn't do it in Europe, does he? Maybe this is a big step towards him answering that definitively, even though, of course, people say it's only the Europa League and all that sort of thing. But I think tonight was a big step in the right direction for him.
But at the same time, this is the first Europa League final for an Italian club in the 21st century. So it is quite a significant step.
It is. It's huge. Yeah.
Sash, what impressed you most about Inter this evening?
I think, we've seen this discipline. Well, with Chelsea, I've seen this very disciplined defensive unit that we saw today. I think... you could see the results of all the shadow training. I mean, they're very, very organized at the back. I don't know how they will deal with Sevilla's width, perhaps. I mean, you could see those big flowing moves, but I think they will be probably a bit tighter at the back with five, because as soon as they lost the ball today, back with five, protected by a three, no space between that. So I'm curious to see how Sevilla are going to try to find their way through that.
Okay, well, Friday is the Europa League semi-final. Next up, Tuesday, it's the first of the Champions League semis, as PSG meet RB Leipzig. Let's tackle that next.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Totally Summer Special by the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
'09. It was the year of the swine flu pandemic, of paper planes, and a new president named Barack Obama. It was the year we learnt new words like alt-right, anti-vaxxer, and subtweet. And the year that the Red Bull Group bought a fifth-tier side from Eastern Germany and called them RB Leipzig. 11 years on, here they are in a Champions League semi-final. How are they going to fare against their opponents, Paris Saint-Germain? Well, we've called up our old friends Raphael Honigstein and Julien Laurens. First up, Rafa, on Leipzig's chances. Rafa, first of all, the French are euphoric about having two clubs in the semi-finals. Reaction a bit more mixed in Germany, given one of their two teams is RB Leipzig.
Yes, they don't generate a lot of sympathy, but I think it really depends on who you're talking to, because I think for a sizable, perhaps majority of fans who are not necessarily, you know, part of the ultra movement, who don't really have perhaps the same adherence to principles and to traditional values, I think there is, I don't want to say an increasing acceptance, but perhaps just a sense of, yeah, they are part of the furniture now and we can't really get that upset about them anymore. So I don't think, you know, you're going to see scenes reminiscent of the ones in Minsk at the moment of people saying, you know, RB Leipzig, get out of the Champions League semi-final type thing.
Noted German football publication Elf Freund refusing to even cover the game because in their mind, a Leipzig isn't a football club, but an imitation. What are the chances that they'll be refusing to cover the final as well?
Yeah, quite low, actually. And that shows you, I think, the limits of the principles. I mean, having said that, I mean, I think if it's Leipzig against Bayern, the chances are very low that they could ignore that. But yeah, I mean, for them, it was an opportunity to sort of reemphasize their sort of moral objections. And they are partly read because of that stance. You know, the people who read Elf Freunde are traditionalists. They like the culture of fandom. They despise and reject, you know, modern football, especially when it comes in the guise of owned or investor-led clubs like Leipzig. So it's not a surprise. But I think, I suspect that even among their readers, there might not be that much respect for the club, but I think there might be a grudging respect for the team and what they're doing under Julian Nagelsmann. Because I think there is, you know, there is a difference. And I think some observers are actually capable of, you know, disliking the club, but still thinking that the team is playing good stuff.
No Timo Werner, as you say, for the Atletico Madrid game, but they did have at the other end Dayo Upamecano, who looked superb at the back and pretty good coming forward as well. What do you think about his chances in the prospective all-French clash between him and Kylian Mbappe?
I mean, he is very fast. That's the first thing everyone says about him, how fast he is. He doesn't look it because he's quite chunky and hulky, but apparently he is the one guy that could give Timo Werner a decent run, quite literally. So I don't think it's necessarily the biggest issue. I think what Leipzig want to do is to play as much football as they can. I don't think they want to sit back. I don't think they want to play on the break. They don't have Timo Werner to play that kind of football necessarily. They could potentially put Adam Müller-Lückmann in, who has similar characteristics, but not quite the same quality as Werner. So I think they'll try and do what they did against Atletico, which is to keep them very far away from their own goal by keeping the ball and by playing combination football. I mean, granted, Atletico themselves made it fairly easy to be kept away from Leipzig's goal because they made very little attempt to go forward once they were level again. But yeah, I think that's going to be the game plan, to just play as much football as they can and take the ball off a Paris side who are probably not used to being without possession that much.
Meantime, speaking of game plans, there's an all-German managerial derby on the benches with Nagelsmann against Tuchel, two of the three German managers in the last four of the Champions League.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because Nagelsmann and Tuchel have a lot of history. Nagelsmann was a 21-year-old player at the second team of Augsburg on the fringes of professional football, and who had some big knee problems and kind of realized at that age that he was not going to be a footballer, a professional footballer. And Thomas Tuchel, his coach and also the coordinator at Augsburg, said, look, why don't you start to do a bit of scouting for me? And he sent him off to scout these village teams effectively. And that was the beginning of Nagelsmann's coaching career. And, you know, 13 years later, they meet in the semi-final of the Champions League. It's quite a story, this.
It's absolutely remarkable. Have they met many times along the way?
They have. When Tuchel was in charge of Dortmund, Nagelsmann had just come through as the coach of Hoffenheim at a really young age. Both have very similar career trajectories, if you will, because Tuchel was named coach in 2009, having been the under-19s coach at Mainz and become the successor of Jurgen Klopp. I mean, there was a guy in between, but he didn't really work out. And Nagelsmann, of course, was appointed also from the under-19s at a time when Hoffenheim were fighting against relegation. People thought it was kind of some kind of joke or PR trick, but he kept them up and then took them into Europe the next season. And both have no big experience as far as coaching was concerned before they got their first jobs. At this level, they were only youth coaches. Both hadn't been players. Both had to stop playing football because of injury problems. And both have shown it's not so much who you are, but what you know, at least in German football. And I think there is a sense of sort of meritocracy playing out there, at least for those two it is.
Raphael Hornigstein. Meantime, in the PSG corner, Julien Laurens. Julien, hello.
Hello, my friend. Hi, everyone.
Hi, Jules. How nice to be able to speak to you about a Champions League semi-final. Uh-huh. Did you ever think?
I had high hopes for PSG, of course, especially after the draw. Mm. Although we knew that Dortmund first and then Atalanta were going to be difficult, but we had high hopes. For Lyon, I don't think anyone saw that coming, not even Lyon themselves. But it's great, it's great. It doesn't mean that Ligue 1 has become the best league in the world overnight. And I don't think we can expect this every season. But right. I think we should enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, absolutely. PSG threw in this semi-final, but they were seconds away from a De Bruyne-esque same stuff, different year post-game comment against Atalanta, weren't they?
Yes, you're right. Although, you know, I thought they played so well, especially in that second half. They were very wasteful in front of goal, especially Neymar, despite having a wonderful game overall. But it was, down to the last few minutes, which is not good for my heart. But it also shows, I think, the character that this team seems to have now, which maybe wasn't there before. And I think they've improved a lot on the psychological aspect as well of games and performances compared to before. And I think they felt that it was their time now. And it was about time that the wheel would turn and be in their favour instead of against.
Okay. Will Mbappe be starting this time?
He will be starting this time. I think he could have started against Atalanta. They just didn't want to take any risk. I mean, Tuchel has always been very cautious with him, even before the second leg against Dortmund, where he had he was ill, badly ill, and could have started, but didn't want to risk him or anything. Same for the Bruges game, if you remember, that we did together on the Goal Show on BT Sport, where he came back from that hamstring injury. And didn't want to start him where he could have started him, and then Kylian Mbappe responded by the hat-trick in 27 minutes or something. So he could have started him this time. He didn't against Atalanta, but he will certainly start against Leipzig, whether that's on his own up front, wide, with the two up front. We're not sure yet, but he will certainly be there from the start.
All right. A lot of people getting excited. We're talking about this with Rafa. The all-French clash potentially between him and Dayot Upamecano.
Yeah, this is going to be fantastic. They know each other a little bit, although, as you know, Kylian Mbappe is one of mine. He's Paris born and bred. Upamecano is from Evreux, which is not in Paris, nowhere near Paris either. But yeah, it's going to be fantastic. I have to say, Jimbo, and this is not us bragging here on the Totally Football Show European edition, but we've been mentioning Upamecano for a long time, and it seemed that people discovered him the other night against Atletico Madrid, and which I was a bit surprised because he's been that good for a long time now. He's very close to the French national team. He has everything to become one of the best defenders in the world very, very soon. So I was a bit surprised by all the comments of people. I said, almost like they'd never seen him before. They didn't know who he was before. But that performance against Atleti was just a confirmation of the incredible talent that he has. And it would be a great battle between him and Mbappe.
Mm. Paris Saint-Germain, though, defensively so strong, offensively so dangerous. What's the weak spot?
Well, I think PSG are the better team individually, the better side individually, but Leipzig are the better team, the better side collectively. And it will all be down to, will this game be won with your individual brilliance? So what Mbappe and Neymar or Di Maria can do, or will you win this game by being the best side collectively together your movement all together, the way you press all together, the way you defend all together, your back line, whether it's a 3 or 4 or 5. I think that PSG are the favorite, and I think that's right. But I think this Leipzig team is so dangerous because of the way they play, with all that intensity and all that movement and all that press, that I think it's not a given that PSG will go through at all. I still think they will, because I do think that in those kind of games, especially over just one game of 90 minutes, your individual brilliance will shine maybe more than your collective strength. But I think Leipzig can also say the opposite.
Mm. One question mark might be Sergio Rico, who's in for the injured Keylor Navas. Rico thus goalkeeping in a Champions League semi-final just a little bit more than a year on from getting relegated with Fulham after conceding 81 goals. Jules.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Navas is the bad news. You would have wanted him. He's been really good this season. And Marco Verratti as well, who's not fit enough to play in this game, which is a shame. You would have wanted PSG to have their strongest 11. But you also would have wanted Leipzig to have their strongest 11 with Timo Werner. So I think those things level up anyway. But Sergio Rico, who, okay, it was a tough season for him at Fulham. He made a few blunders as well. But he has quite a good European pedigree, if you look at it, because he won the Europa League with Sevilla and Unai Emery. He actually played really well that season. He also had one good campaign in the Champions League for them. So you'll have to trust him. There's not much you can do anyway. Navas can't play in the semi-final, so you'll have to be Rico. He's tall, he's good on his line, I think. Let's just hope that the pressure doesn't get to him and he can stay focused. And if the back four is solid and absorbs the waves that will come from Leipzig, then hopefully he can have a good game.
Julien Laurens, the guys will be joining us actually tomorrow to preview the other French-German semi-final. But Sasha, you're waving your hands in the air suddenly. What has Jules just said that's caught your attention?
Sergio Rico caught my attention, just like he did back in 2018-19 season. Was
the only thing he caught.
Definitely. A series of pathetic performances, which I think significantly contributed to Fulham's relegation. I think, in a way, Sergio Rico's situation in 2018-19 kind of summed up the chaos at Fulham at the time, because he was brought in on loan. Fabri was bought for 5 million from Besiktas, quickly discarded into reserves because he basically wasn't very good. At the end of August...
It's a fabrication.
Exactly, it was completely fabrication of a goalkeeper. Jose Correa, goalkeeping coach, left at the end of May. And after that, I think Rico just sort of moped around. I went to see a number of the Fulham games against the top sides, from January onwards. And every game I watched him play in a team that really needs the goalkeeper to step up and really help them, he just played like a coward. Didn't come out for any crosses. You start off like 20th of January, last minute, good battling draw with Spurs, 1-1. 93rd minute, doesn't Kirk come out. Harry Winks, who's like 5'10", heads it in from 6 yards. Saw him against Chelsea. The only thing that stood out about that game, apart from the size of Gonzalo Higuain's bottom, was the fact that Rico was completely mute. He did not talk to his defence. Against Liverpool, he dropped the ball, grabbed Mane, gave away a penalty, ended up costing them the game. And finally, against Manchester City, 3.5 minutes in, he shanks a clearance, Fulham fall apart. The game's done after 3 minutes. I thought he was absolutely dreadful. I thought he didn't step up to the plate. And I thought from that particular season onwards, I'm really not a great fan of Sergio Rico.
No, I get that. Sasha, how long have you been carrying this Sergio Rico dossier around with you?
Really upsetting. It's sometimes, you look at a player, you watch a player, watch him a few times, and you just think he's letting everyone down. And in my opinion, he really let his team down that season.
Will you be rooting for Leipzig then on Tuesday night?
Well, in this situation, I probably will be. If anything, I'll be rooting for Leipzig's history. Ironically, something that RB Leipzig do not have. Because I went to Leipzig a few years ago, in 2013. Okay. 2013 was the 200th anniversary of Völkerschlacht, the Battle of the Nations, which turned the tide of history in Napoleonic Europe, where the French came up against the Russians, the Prussians, and the Austrians. So if you like, that was the decisive Franco-Prussian encounter of its age. And Napoleon ended up being defeated, and the Russians and the Prussians ended up marching into Paris in 1814. So maybe I hoped for another repeat of a Prussian triumph.
All right. What was the key then? Why did Napoleon lose that battle?
Basically, by that time, he annoyed pretty much everybody. Right. His conquest of Germany in 1806, 1807 was quite brutal, and it basically gave the rise to the first sense of where Germany, we need to rise up, kind of brought the nation together. Ironically, Leipzig itself was in Saxony, which was allied with Napoleon, so they're in a really weird situation there. But if there was a historical battlefield to the south, because it was a three-day battle, but Murat's cavalry, 10,000 of them, charged at the Russians, nearly broke through, nearly captured the Tsar. And then they came up against one of these drainage canals, because it's quite swampy around there. The horses kind of stopped for a moment. The Russians had the time to regroup, attacked back, and then gradually pushed Napoleon out of the city. I have to say, it's quite ironic twist of history. In 1913, they opened this humongous monument to the Battle of the Nations, when the last time the Russians and the Prussians were friends. But if you go to the top of the monument, you can actually see the stadium of Lokomotive Leipzig, who were the traditional big team in Leipzig before RB came along. But unfortunately, then Division 4. And I think something that happened after the fall of the wall was that a lot of small football clubs, they were basically overrun by the far right. And I think they just weren't particularly attractive, I think, for the populace at large to watch. And maybe perhaps this is where RB Leipzig stepped in. Yes, they might be bland corporate and everything, but they were kind of seen as sort of family friendly. So they get the 40,000, while Lokomotive, the traditional team, get a few thousand, back in South Leipzig. So I think, sociologically, it's quite, Leipzig is a very, very interesting place. And, whether you agree or disagree with the project, and I think that project could possibly be anywhere in Germany. I think that's the German fans' big problem. They don't really give much to the community. And I think until a Red Bull starts getting in the club more involved in the city itself, I think it will always be this alien body in German football for a lot of fans around the country.
Mm, indeed. James, how do you want to follow that?
Well, no, I just always appreciated, Murat? There's some great portraits of him. And he was killed in Calabria, wasn't he? He was killed on the toe of the Italian boot.
He was executed, wasn't he?
He was executed and famously said, I think it was something like, "Soldiers, do your duty, but not the face, not the face."
Is that where that comes from? Reprised in
American Psycho, all those years later.
He was King of Naples, I believe. Napoleon made him King of Naples. Quite a flamboyant figure.
Good times.
Well, that's right. RB Leipzig PSG. James. Some people are painting this as a bit of a mismatch, but what do you think?
Well, I think RB are a side that are better coached than PSG. And I think that's because they've got fewer egos in the side, that it has been assembled as per the requirements of its coach, Julian Nagelsmann. And I think they're greater than the sum of their parts. And I wasn't entirely convinced by PSG against Atalanta. I thought they were the better side. They deserved to go through. I thought Neymar played very well. But I think there was still a feeling that they can be got at, that they're vulnerable. And for that reason, it wouldn't surprise me really if we see Leipzig overcome PSG and reach the final. I just thought Tuchel, his game plan for the first hour of that game against Atalanta just seemed very reductive. Either that, or his players weren't paying attention to the instructions that he'd given them pre-game. I just don't think that's a prospect or an eventuality that would happen at Leipzig, for example, and it gives Leipzig a chance.
Still in that game, Neymar had a lot of presentable chances even in the first hour. Are we anticipating that Leipzig will do better defensively? Because, Atalanta could have been three or four down.
They won't need to be better defensively if Neymar keeps finishing like that. that felt like a clear strategy from Gasperini, and it was ingenious for the first 45 minutes.
And also, they've got the modern equivalent of the drainage canal, Upamecano. So, so we'll see how that all works out anyway this Tuesday evening. Very good. Still to come on today's Totally Football Show Summer Special. We're going to be catching up with Alvaro Romeo and the latest from Barcelona. First of all, though, here's Lee Price from Paddy Power.
Hello. The final eight become the final four, and we've got an odds-on favourite to win the Champions League. No, it's not Leon. Bayern are 8-15 after their historic 8-2, and who could seriously bet against them? But first, the battle to lose to the German champions in the final. Having been unsure on PSG in the last round, we now make them odds on to beat Leipzig here, priced at 8-11. The energy drink powered side are 16-5 to cause an upset, or 3-1 just to cause extra time. Kylian Mbappe is even to score any time in this game, while Maxim Choupo-Moting is 6-1 to score the last goal. Hey, that isn't a joke this time.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Now, meltdown is ongoing in Barcelona, as you know, after that 8-2 defeat by Bayern in the Champions League quarterfinals. Consigned the Catalans to their first trophyless season in more than a decade. Monday saw Quique Setién fired and talk that Barcelona had chosen Ronald Koeman to begin their rebuilding. Well, to tell us more about that, here's Alvaro Romeo. Alvaro, first of all, is this Koeman deal actually done?
No, it is not done. It is not official, but he is definitely the main candidate. The Barcelona director, Oscar Grau, is already in Amsterdam. And Ronald Koeman was already contacted in January to be the Barcelona manager, but well, at that time it didn't happen. Ronald Koeman wasn't too sure about that. Probably he thought that international football was going to go on in March and then, you know, in summer during the Euros. But yeah, this second time, it seems that Ronald Koeman is closer to Barcelona and he's the main candidate, definitely. A former Barcelona player, he was the goal scorer in the European Cup final 1992, and he's a Barcelona legend, really. The other candidate could be probably García Pimienta, some of the... This is the Barcelona second team manager, some of the... Members of the board think that it could be a good decision, but majority Ronald Koeman seem to be the biggest candidate to be the Barcelona manager. And now the question is, how many years will Bartomeu, Barcelona president, offer Ronald Koeman? Because let's don't forget that on the 15th of March, there will be elections for Barcelona. And of course, if he offers on Ronald Koeman 3 years and another candidate comes with Xavi, let's say, and wins the elections, then they will have to pay Ronald Koeman a sacking fee.
Mm. That said, they do need somebody for the meanwhile anyway, even if it is going to be somebody who's only until March. You say a legend as a player, perhaps a little bit less so as a manager. How will Koeman's appointment, if it is confirmed, go down with the supporters?
Well, I think that with a little bit of skepticism, because yes, the older generation remember Ronald Koeman, but at the same time he was in La Liga and he had a huge controversy when he was managing Valencia with the three Valencia captains, Cañizares, Albelda and Angulo, I believe. And yeah, I think that his stint in La Liga left like a little bit of a dark point in his CV. All that said, there is also some expectation about Ronald Koeman. At the end of the day, he is a manager who has been working under Johan Cruyff, and they expect the fans that finally Ronald Koeman is going to apply some of the Johan Cruyff's ideas, because Quique Setién said that he was going to do it, and at the end he ended up playing like Ernesto Valverde, or even worse. So I would say that, Ronald Koeman being a Barcelona legend, that's going to help at the beginning, but I want to see whether he is capable and daring enough of doing what he said in an interview a few months ago when speaking in Spanish for a reporter from Catalonia. He said that the players in their 30s, the likes of Busquets, Piqué, Arturo Vidal, Luis Suarez, you name them, needed to step out little by little and a big change was needed. He wasn't saying that the change was needed now, but yeah, Ronald Koeman now, he has the chance perhaps to do the job that some other managers couldn't. And I believe that the board, in this case, Bartomeu and the rest, they're going to vote for Ronald Koeman to do a huge restructuration in the team. And in fact, in the statement saying that Quique Setién was leaving, it also said that this is just part of a big restructuration that hasn't been completed yet.
Okay, which names do you think will go for the new season?
They will assess the cases of players with big wages in their 30s. Luis Suarez, Sergio Busquets, Gerard Piqué, Arturo Vidal and Rakitic. Umtiti will be one of these players who is younger but still has a good value in the market, and I believe that he will be sold. And they will assess the, as well the cases of Dembele and Philippe Coutinho. For those players, probably Barcelona can get a lot of money. I'm not saying that all of them will leave, but they will definitely, Barcelona will definitely try to find an exit for all these very important players in Barcelona history, especially the first four that I mentioned.
And there's another player in his 30s who has really big wages, isn't there?
Yes, that was the only guy that is left to talk about, is Lionel Messi. Yesterday, Sport Interativo, the same journalist who announced that Neymar was going to leave Barcelona, said that Messi wants to go now. From reports that come from Catalonia, apparently that information is not wrong at all. And the question will be whether this happens or not. Obviously, Lionel Messi, if he gets presented a very convincing project, I believe that he could be persuaded still to stay. And if he wants to go, what is Barcelona going to do? Are they going to get rid of his wages and sell him on the cheap? I don't think so. He's got a 700 million release clause. And I don't think that Bartomeu is going to allow Lionel Messi to leave for a cheap price, because that would be the most damning indictment to his stint as Barcelona president. But yes, reports say, and these reports seem to be very reliable, that Lionel Messi wants to leave now.
On that bombshell, Alvaro Romeo. This Messi story still feels a little bit like it's being powered by enormous amounts of wishful thinking by one or two clubs and interested parties. But every day it grows a little bit, James.
Yeah, I think until matters are resolved at Barcelona in terms of the structure that they put in place for, what, the next 7 months, this isn't going to go away. And I think it's going to be such a toxic environment for, let's say, Ronald Koeman, who comes in, because ultimately he is the man of the most unpopular president in recent history at Barcelona, who basically, yeah, I would say in fans' eyes, is standing in the way of real meaningful change that they need to see at Barcelona. And this just seems to kick the can down the road until March. It looks like he's going to get, what, a 2-year deal. And yet he probably knows that, you know, by the time a new president comes in, endorsed by every kind of ex-Barcelona player who fans would like to see on the bench, like Xavi, he's going to be out on his arse again, which just for me just is just a crazy decision from Koeman to leave what seems like a very promising generation of Dutch players who he reached the Nations League final with last summer, losing to Cristiano's Portugal in Portugal. You've got a Euros coming up, and you know by the time that Euros comes around, he might already be out of a job at Barcelona.
Well, yeah, he could just step back and.
It's staggeringly short-sighted, in my opinion. And
if he takes it, Alvaro pointing out there that it's not done, and they were in Amsterdam on Monday to talk to him. It might be that there is another twist or turn or two.
Well, like David
tale.
Silva, of course, who was supposed to be joining Lazio, rocked up at Real Sociedad.
Yeah. So, if it is Koeman, though, however much sense it might make from his own kind of career terms, and you know, let's bear in mind that this is a man who's been so dedicated to the idea of reaching the Barcelona bench that he used to drive around in a Bentley with a Barcelona number plate when he was at Everton. How strong do you think is his coaching CV for the job that, if he takes it, that he's about to going to need to do?
Well, this is what I'm looking at. So Barcelona trophyless for the first time in over a decade. Koeman is trophyless for over a decade. And I mean, he's been to, you know, AZ, Feyenoord, Southampton, Everton. I mean, okay, maybe you might not be expected to win that much there, but it's, I mean, even at Everton, you know, the my understanding was that this air of I could be best somewhere better kind of didn't really go down particularly well. And yeah, I don't really think, if you look through his CV, particularly how checkered he is, he's never really stayed anywhere for long outside of Holland. And given the environment at Barcelona, you know, is this politically, is he going to survive there?
I can't see that being welcomed in the dressing room as like, yeah, this is going to change everything. I think it's clear from what Gerard Piqué was saying after the elimination to Bayern that it's the structure of the club that needs to change. And as long as the existing president is there, it doesn't really matter, I don't think, who he brings in to replace the sporting director who's, you know, expected to go, and all the other kind of the guys that, you know, have jobs at Barcelona, which are seemingly very important. And, you know, they seem to benefit from more than the club in the sense that the reputational cachet of being part of Barcelona seems to have preceded them, really. For a long time. I mean, I saw, for example, Roma being linked with one of the sporting directors at Barcelona, Ramon Planes. And it's like, well, what has he done to kind of justify, I'm going to go and be sporting director for Roma? When you look at the track record of Barcelona's recruitment in recent years, you know, other than being able to basically, you know, wave a CV and say, ooh, look, Barcelona, and hope someone's silly enough to think that's that means you're actually really, really good at your job. I don't know. It does seem that as Barcelona have got more and more popular and have kind of, certainly over the last 15 years, does seem to be the last 15 years of Barcelona being maybe the premier team among the super clubs. It does seem like, fame being the mask that eats the face a little bit. And it's just been, the last 5 years just seems been very corrosive in that respect.
Or as another great man once said, victory has defeated you.
Was that Murat?
That's right. That's right. So, well, there you go. Interesting that Simon Cooper was tweeting today that he's seen reports in the Netherlands that Arsene Wenger has approached the Dutch FA to maybe take over from Koeman as their national team manager if Koeman goes. I'm not seeing that anywhere else, but I'm not across particularly Dutch football sources. So, yeah. Anyway, well, there you go. Football, it never stops throwing up fascinating storylines. And you can be sure we'll have a whole bunch more come Wednesday morning. When we return with Totally Football Show's summer special, looking back on tonight's Champions League semi-final and forward to the other one. Sasha, thank you so much for being with us today.
See you later.
And yeah, I think it's time to let go of the Sergio Rico business. Fulham are back up.
Yeah. They have a good keeper now, Roddick. Solid, old school.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. Thank you. Thank you for this session, James. Thank you. I feel lighter.
Okay, good. And many thanks to you, James Horncastle.
Pleasure.
And Alvaro Romeo and Rafa and Jules, etc. And producer Charlie. Listener, thank you above all. Do join us tomorrow. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.